over at bangthebook.com. We are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. We'll have a Super Contest article coming up here on Saturday with our picks, with what happened in the field in week one, all that type of stuff. Also give you the pick counts, the consensus, all the fun things that we cover on a weekly basis with the Super Contest. We'll also do the same with the Circa Million as we did last week. And then next Tuesday, we'll have recaps for both the Super Contest as well as the Circa Million. Hoping to get my spreadsheet back on track for the pick counts for the Golden Nugget Ultimate Football Challenge. Hoping next Tuesday we'll be able to have a recap of that for you over there at the website. Of course, we also have our NFL picks from Danny Vorgs, my college football power ratings, and my spreads for week three posted over at the website. NASCAR playoffs start this weekend. Got a preview for that. Great golf preview this week from James Mazzola as the PGA Tour season gets fired up here with the wraparound portion. We'll have a UFC preview for this weekend as well. College football and NFL market reports will be posted early Friday. Look, it's a very busy time of year. We got a lot of stuff going on over at bangthebook.com. Please make sure that you check it all out. As you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB, and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. All right, so we start things off here with my week two thoughts for the Westgate Super Contest, as well as my analysis of the Circa Million. 3,328 entrants in the Super Contest this year, a new record passing last year's 3,123. We went 3-2 with both of our entries here in the Super Contest in week one, 2-2-1 over in the Circa Million, because the Colts were a push at 6 in the Circa Million. They were 6.5 in the Super Contest. So, of course, that half-point disparity, discrepancy, whatever you want to call it, between the two contests was the difference for us. So 3-2 in the Super Contest, 2-2-1 in the Circa Million. Looking overall at the Super Contest for week one, 49.94%, 8,288 winners, 8,307 losers. The Super Contest gold, interestingly enough, 1.5% behind the traditional field. Gold comes in at 48.44%. More often than not, last year, we saw about 1.5% to 2% difference between these two fields. But this time, the gold does come in below the traditional at 281 and 299. 11 fewer entrants in the Super Contest gold this year, 128 last year, down to 117 here for this year. So we'll be keeping an eye on that as the season goes along here, looking at the difference between the gold field and the traditional field. You would think, in theory, the gold field would be sharper. $5,000 buy-in, winner take all in that one. In the Super Contest, $1,500 buy-in, 8% taken for the administrative fee, 3,328 people. So, you know, we'd like to think that the gold would be a little bit sharper. Last year it was, the year before that it was, this year off to a little bit slower of a start than the Super Contest. And, you know, look, we had some people not submit picks, and, you know, some people kind of saying, well, how could they have forgotten about it? Well, you know, it's also a possibility because of the sign-up deadlines for this. Maybe those people just weren't able to make their picks. So I think there were nine entrants that didn't submit picks in week one of the Super Contest, one in the Super Contest gold. But like I said, 3-2 for both of our entries here. The consensus in the Super Contest, 5-11 in week one. So the most selected side in each game, just 5-11, but three of the top five most selected sides did come in. I believe those were Ravens, Colts, and Texans, all coming through in the first week of the Super Contest. And those were plays that had substantial differences between the two sides. I believe it was, you know, over 900 picks for the Ravens game, 800 or so for the Colts game. So those were two sides that were very lopsided, which is why we do wind up right around a coin flip, almost 50%, even though the consensus came in at just 5-11. I believe the consensus in the gold was 6-9, one game. I believe the Rams and Panthers maybe was one that did have the same number of picks on both sides. So I don't have that information in front of me here at the top of the segment. I just mostly have my thoughts and my picks here in front of me. But in any event, you can get all that information in the Saturday article over at bangthebook.com. and also in that Tuesday recap article. So again, just like the concepts that I talked about last week, you know, you just want to get off to a good start in this thing. There were 60 entries that went 5-0 in the Super Contest. So yeah, we're already two games back, but that's the biggest thing about the Super Contest is not burying yourself. You know, a bad week for you needs to be 3-2, or you know, at the absolute worst, 2-3. That was a problem we ran into the Golden Nugget, going 2-5, my college picks going 0-4. So that was very disappointing. But that's the big thing about these contests is that you want to keep yourself in striking distance. And I'll talk about that a little bit later on in the segment here with one of the picks that I have for week two, that you know, you just want to pick winners. You want to get into a situation where you don't fall too far behind the crowd. Some people want to go anti-consensus from the start. Some people want to go with that very contrarian handicap. Some people, you know, their modus operandi in the NFL is just to take really ugly dogs. Well, there are some very ugly dogs on the board here for this week, to say the least. Will a lot of people side up with those bad teams? I don't know. I guess we'll have to wait and see what the pick counts look like on Saturday. But everybody has a different strategy for handicapping in the NFL. And some people do have different strategies for handicapping in this contest as well. Sometimes there's some game theory that comes into play. And again, I'll talk about that a little bit more with one of the sides that's on my radar here for this week. But, you know, still, I mean, obviously everyone's trying to get to the same goal of picking winners. But, you know, there's some risk-reward that goes into this contest as well. And like I talked about last week, that's not for me at this point in time. Right now, I just want to focus on getting as many points and as many winners as I possibly can. I'll save some of the game theory and some of the other stuff, you know, for later on in the season, like only taking lines that have a half point because getting the win is more important than getting the push. You know, different stuff like that does come into play here with this contest. But for the most part, early on in the Super Contest here, everybody just trying to pick winners and get as many victories as they possibly can. So that will be my goal here once again for this week. Now, again, the Super Contest lines come out Wednesday afternoon in Vegas, Wednesday evening Eastern time. The Circa Million lines don't come out until Thursday morning. And some very interesting news coming across the wire Thursday morning that Sam Darnold is not going to play for the New York Jets this week, has mono. Mono typically a multi-week thing, so the Jets could be without Darnold for quite some time here. In the Super Contest, the Browns are -2.5. In the Circa Million, the Browns are -6.5. With the adjustments after the Darnold announcement, Trevor Siemian getting the start there for the Jets, and also the fact that Le'Veon Bell went for an MRI. We didn't have results on that by the time the Circa Million lines came out. But still, you know, they factored in the Dalton to Siemian drop-off and then also probably considered, you know, what's going on with Le'Veon Bell, some of the other skill position guys for the Jets. So, again, a four-point difference here between the Super Contest line and the Circa Million line. So with that being said, I have no doubt whatsoever that the Browns will be a top five consensus pick in the Super Contest this week. That's another one of the strategies here with the stale lines. You know, do you go after that line value that's out there? Well, as it pertains to the Browns here in week two, they will be one of the five most selected sides, probably number one or number two when we get all the pick counts on Saturday. I'd be surprised if they're in the top five in the Circa Million because that's already an adjusted number. And the Browns, look, in week one, they didn't look like a team capable of beating anybody by a touchdown. So I don't think they'll be a top five pick in the Circa Million with the adjusted 6.5 number, but there's no question in my mind that they'll be a top five pick in the Westgate Super Contest here. As far as other line differences between the two contests, most of the rest of them here, just a half a point, one point difference between the two lines. The Chargers are -2.5 in the Super Contest. They're -2 in the Circa Million. The Bills, -1.5 in the Super Contest, -1 in the Circa. Patriots, -18.5 in the Super Contest, 18 in the Circa. Texans, -9 at the Westgate for the Super Contest, -8 at the Circa. That's the one-point difference that's out there. The Bengals, -2 in the Super Contest, -1.5 in the Circa. Chiefs, -7 Super Contest, -6.5 at the Circa. And Eagles, -1.5 at the Super Contest, -1 at the Circa. And We have talked about this before. We talked about it with Wes Reynolds, you know, in the lead up to these contests, and also when he was filling in for the Super Contest segment with me last year, that at the Westgate, they will put some of their opinions into these numbers. They will give you as difficult of a decision as they possibly can in most instances. I presume we'll see that as we go throughout the year with the group that's headlining things over at the Circa as well. Now, of course, there are some differences in the market from Wednesday night to Thursday. Sometimes the lines between the two contests simply reflect that. But, you know, there could be some influence put into these numbers here as well. So, you know, it'll be interesting to follow along with some of these different lines that are up for the two contests. And, you know, look, last week, the Circa, there were pushes on that Colts game that were not there in the Super Contest. So lost a half a point there, taking the worst number at the Circa. Still a game that we liked, still a side that we liked. Would have been nice if the Chargers would have been held to a field goal in overtime. But that's the thing. You know, every half point matters. You know, the line, the way that I like to say it is the line doesn't matter until it does. And there will be times over the course of the college football and the NFL season, and very much so in the NBA and college basketball, where, you know, you lose by a half a point, you lose by a full point. Those things are going to happen. You know, the Panthers were really not three at any point in that game against the Rams, but one of my losses in the Super Contest last week was by a half point on the Panthers. You know, not to say that I would have bought a half point with a personal play or anything like that, but you got to keep in mind here the importance of those half points around these key numbers. By and large, 3, 4, 6, and 7. You know, those half points can and will come into play, and they certainly did for us last week here with the 3-2 in the Super Contest, but a 2-2-1 in the Circa. Now, some people have cards that they can't narrow down for week two. Some people like a lot of different plays that are out there. We've talked about it this week on Bang the Book Radio. It's been a theme for us all week long. Week one to week two is a big overreaction week in the NFL. So a lot of people are seeing a lot of things that they like out there. I don't love the week as much as some do. Others are seeing a lot of that overreaction. To me, I'm just skeptical of a lot of teams, a lot of games, a lot of the week one results that we had. Again, I mentioned this when it came to college football after week one. Every team will play its best game and its worst game at some point over the course of the season. For some teams, their best game will be in week one. For other teams, their worst game will be in week one. And this is why you don't want to overreact too much to what you've just seen. You know, some people are going to take Miami solely on the basis that that line was about a touchdown lower after what we saw in week one, after Miami getting blown out by the Ravens and the Patriots doing their thing against the Steelers. And of course, some of the postgame comments from the Dolphins, guys wanting to get traded, this and that. You know, that's a line that moved almost a touchdown. You know, if you flip home field advantage here, Patriots -24, -24.5. That's a huge, it's the second largest number that I can think of in the NFL. There was a 26.5, I believe, in the middle of the 2000s. I think Jacksonville and somebody, you know, there is a lot of overreaction in the marketplace. But here's the thing. Some of it may be justified. You know, maybe the Ravens are going to be that good. Maybe Lamar Jackson is going to be that proficient as a passer this season now that he's in his, you know, first full year running an NFL offense. Maybe the Dolphins will be that bad. Maybe Arizona will be that bad, like they were for the first three quarters of that game against the Detroit Lions. You know, so a lot of overreactions out there for sure. But at the same time, maybe those wind up being justified positions by the odds makers, by the bettors that steamed some of those things up. So again, a lot of stuff to keep in mind here as we head on into week two. So we start with the picks that I'm very likely to make here. Now, again, recording this on Thursday evening, as you know, recording at about 4:30 Eastern time when I get started with it, things may change. Injury reports may change. Our Golden Nugget plays have to be in by Friday early evening. Our Super Contest and our Circa Million plays don't have to be in until Saturday. So lots of time for things to change. Maybe I read something that takes me off of a game, but like I said on last week's segment, I'm almost never going to play the other side of a game. Now, look, for my first game here, I do like the Colts +3. if Jacoby Brissett gets hurt in practice tomorrow and it's Titans minus 3 and we're going with, you know, the backup situation in Indianapolis, which is, you know, at this point, the third string quarterback, maybe I take the Titans at that point. You know, something absolutely crazy, a quarterback injury, some kind of thing like that, maybe I'll play the other side, but I won't just go to the other side with no rhyme or reason. It has to be something earth-shattering that happened to the handicap of that game. So, like I said, first play for me that I do like on the board here, going to go back to the well with the Indianapolis Colts. Their rotation number 4 in the Super Contest. This line is plus 3 in both the Super Contest and the Circa Million. And I was on the Colts last week. They got there for me in the Super Contest. Once again, they pushed in the Circa. But when you look at that performance for the Colts, there were some things that aren't going to happen again. They had 16 missed tackles in that game. And I don't think the Titans have the same skill position guys in space that the Chargers do. I just don't think that, you know, the Colts were in tip-top shape for that game. And this was mentioned. I believe I read this over at The Athletic or something like that, that, you know, the Colts didn't play their first team defense a whole lot in the preseason. They wanted to make sure that everybody stayed healthy, especially knowing what was going on with the offensive side of the ball and all the fallout with Andrew Luck. And of course, then he announces his retirement. The Colts defenders didn't get a lot of preseason reps. They weren't up to game speed here in this one. And I really like this Colts defense. They've done a phenomenal job retooling that group. It was a, you know, career worst game for Darius Leonard. He was absolutely terrible in this one. 16 missed tackles is not going to happen again for a defense with this level of speed, and certainly not against a team like the Titans. You know, the Titans have some guys that can play, a Derrick Henry, a Delanie Walker. They don't have, you know, a scat back type guy like Austin Eckler. They don't have an elite when healthy wide receiver like Keenan Allen. You know, they don't have a shifty running back to the degree of Justin Jackson who can come in and kind of wreak havoc on a little bit of a tired defense. So I think the Colts defense plays much, much better here this week. And they did play a little bit better in the second half to begin with, give the Colts a chance to get that game to overtime where they did ultimately lose. But I think the Colts defense plays much better here in week 2. And I think the offense could be even more efficient. Jacoby Brissett was good. The team had lots of positives to say about him. They praised his week 1 play. And they come back, tie that game. Yeah, they didn't win it, but it gives Brissett some more confidence. And also what gives Brissett a lot of confidence, Frank Reich basically ran the same playbook for Brissett that he would run for Andrew Luck. So there's some confidence right there in and of itself that a guy who, you know, had a top 10, maybe borderline top 5 season last year for the Colts, you know, that guy retires and Frank Reich feels comfortable running the same playbook. I guess a very big commentary on Jacoby Brissett. Marlon Mack ran the football really, really well in that game last week. They're going to be balanced on offense in terms of moving the ball both ways. They're going to get Brissett to get the ball out in space to guys like T.Y. Hilton. Like Jack Doyle will have a little bit more of an impact this week. Hopefully Eric Ebron learns how to catch. But like the Colts, so many things to like about them in that week 1 near miss. And look, if the Colts win that game, or maybe if the Titans don't beat the Browns by 30 points, this line's probably 2 or 2.5. I think there's a little bit of extra line value here on the Colts because of some of that Andrew Luck overreaction that's still sitting out there in the market, and also because the Colts defense just didn't play up to par. So I like the Colts this week. Major injury concerns once again for the Titans on the offensive line. The Colts offensive line played well last week. They have an advantage in the trenches on both sides of the ball as far as I'm concerned. I like their offense more. I like Frank Reich versus Mike Vrabel. Like the Colts here, number 4, plus 3 in the Super Contest for week 2. Next up here on my list, number 17, the Pittsburgh Steelers as a 4-point favorite against the Seattle Seahawks. Now, the Steelers were on my leans list last week. They didn't wind up making the cut. I went with the Broncos instead. I was screwed either way in that one. But here's the thing about Pittsburgh. I think it was just a bad spot for them. In retrospect, hindsight being 2020, Belichick and the Patriots coaching staff coached circles around Mike Tomlin and his staff. It's just the way that it was. That's a game that the Patriots are 100% fully focused on out of the gate. That's not to say that Pittsburgh wasn't fully focused on it either, but the Patriots just kind of have Pittsburgh's number. There have been some close games, but The Steelers are never able to pull those games out. And what New England does very, very well, the Seahawks do not do as well. New England, a lot of crossing routes in that game against the Steelers. Steelers playing man coverage, chasing guys around. They were lost in space. They didn't play very well in the back seven in that game. Seattle's not going to exploit that. Seattle's a run-first type of offense. They don't run a whole lot of crossing routes. They run very few of them, in fact. I think they ran one of them in week one against Cincinnati. Maybe they try to do it a little bit more here against Pittsburgh in week two, but all that does is take them out of the offense that they're comfortable with. If they try to deviate and change too much, I think that plays into Pittsburgh's hands here, especially since that was kind of a focal point for the Steelers in practice this week. Again, the Seattle offense is really predicated on running the football and Russell Wilson improvising. You know, there aren't a lot of times when Wilson stands there in the pocket and tries to throw over the offensive line. That's where you get a lot of those crossing routes and stuff like that. It's a lot of moving pockets for Wilson and things of that sort. Maybe the Steelers wind up losing some guys in coverage. Maybe that winds up hurting them in this spot. But I don't think the Seahawks can take full advantage, much like New England did last week. Now, on the Seattle side here, this stat coming from Brad Powers on Thursday's edition of Bang the Book Radio, the Seahawks in road games in weeks one or two, 1-14 straight up, 1-13-1 against the spread. This was a big article over on the Athletics Seahawks page. The Seahawks are minus 61 in point differential in road openers since the 2010 road opener. So this is a team that does not play well on the road early on in the season. The early start, of course, here could be a big-time factor for Pittsburgh. Steelers are off of that embarrassing loss. We all know about 0-2 teams to make the playoffs as well. Maybe one does it. One or two do it every 1 or 2 years. It's about, you know, 85, 88% that you don't make the playoffs when you start 0-2. So the Steelers really have a lot on the line here in this one. I would expect them to be better. You know, I would expect the offense to be better. I would expect Vance McDonald to be featured a little bit more. And also, too, the Seahawks secondary and their safeties just did not play well at all against Cincinnati. The Bengals 0-for-3 in the red zone. Otherwise, they wind up winning that game. The Seahawks just, they don't have it in the back seven anymore. The Legion of Boom is dead. You know it. I know it. The Steelers know it. Ben Roethlisberger knows it. You know, they'll get James Conner more touches here in this game. They just fell behind early last week. Couldn't really run through the offense. Couldn't really do everything that they wanted to do. And also in that game last week, I don't know if things go differently. I don't think that they do. But the Steelers were stopped on 3rd-and-1 three separate times in the first half. Then wound up having to punt. Or, you know, in the second half, they get stopped on 3rd-and-1. Kick that short field goal. I believe it was 5 times in the game. They got stopped on 3rd-and-1 or 4th-and-1. And maybe that speaks to something more. But to me, that's an outlier. To me, that's variance. To me, I don't think that that's something that happens this week with Pittsburgh. So give me the Steelers here, -4 against the visiting Seattle Seahawks. We'll stay in the AFC North here. And number 19 is the Cincinnati Bengals. They're a 2-point favorite here against the San Francisco 49ers. As mentioned on Tuesday's show with Rolf Michaels, the 49ers did not go home. They're practicing in Youngstown, Ohio here. So at least they stayed on the East Coast. But still, you know, that's not really an optimal situation in week two of the NFL season. You've got Jimmy Garoppolo, who, you know, missed most of last year. You've got Garoppolo, who has all this promise and this potential. We've certainly seen it, but it's not like he has a ton of starts under his belt. Now this is a team, you know, having to practice away from home. They're very happy with the facilities at Youngstown State, but they're still not NFL caliber facilities. So that's a little bit different. Not a whole lot going on in the Youngstown area. So, you know, maybe they are able to focus strictly on football. But still, these back-to-back East Coast roadies early on in the season can be very, very challenging, to say the least. So I think that there are some situational elements here for San Francisco that do come into question a little bit. But look, I'm going to bark or growl or roar, whatever you want to call it, up the Bengals tree here. They played so well last week. They struggled in the red zone. Like I said, they went 0-for-3. Otherwise, they probably win that game. Now, one of the things that does give me a little bit of pause on this game is obviously the status of Joe Mixon. You know, Joe Mixon would be a great piece to have against this San Francisco pass rush. Robert Saleh was very creative with his blitz packages, really confused Jameis Winston last week. I think Andy Dalton has a better head for the game than Jameis Winston does. I think he'll be able to get the ball out quicker, throw it to guys wearing his own uniform. So I'm not so much worried about that, but it would be nice to have Mixon out there to slow down that pass rush a little bit, be a safety valve, something like that. You know, we'll see how Giovanni Bernard performs in blitz pickup and whatnot. But still, I mean, this is a Cincinnati offense that has playmakers. They've got some big targets with guys like, you know, Eifert, Uzuma. You've got, of course, you know, Tyler Boyd's a big dude. So they've got some guys they can spread the ball around to. And Dalton did that with a lot of success in week one. So, you know, it's one of those things where maybe John Ross takes the top off of this defense. You know, maybe Tyler Boyd becomes your possession type of guy, something like that. So, you know, I think that there are a lot of different options, a lot of different ways this Bengals team can attack you with or without Mixon. And for the 49ers, they've got a good pass rush, that's for sure. You worry a little bit about the back seven. I worry a little bit about Garoppolo and their ability to move the football here against a really athletic Bengals team with an underrated pass rush of its own. You know, so I think Zach Taylor does well. I read a great article about Anarumo, the defensive coordinator for the Bengals, and how he was switching up coverages, giving Russell Wilson a lot of different looks. The Seahawks did not have much success offensively in that game. They couldn't run the football. Wilson didn't break free for too many big plays. The Bengals played really well last week, and maybe I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. Maybe I'm overreacting to week one, but I'll take the Bengals here minus the two, number 19 in the Super Contest. Again, it will be a bummer if Mixon is ruled out, but I think I still like the Bengals enough in this spot to go ahead and take them because Mixon didn't do much last week either. You know, maybe he's a guy that you do have to pay attention to, but still, he didn't put up too many numbers last week. So I think that Cincinnati can have success here against the 49ers, who are also in a pretty difficult spot. Staying in the AFC North here, number 31, the Cleveland Browns minus 2.5. I liked the Browns to begin with, so I'm a little bit disappointed with the Sam Darnold news because now everybody is going to be on the Browns. And I would say of the four, you know, very likely picks I've talked about here so far, this is the one I'd be on the fence about because if the Browns don't play well, staying off of this game is almost a win. When you think about 3,328 people in this contest, this line being 4 points higher out there in the marketplace, I would guess, I would set the over-under at probably about 1,375.5, I guess, the number of contestants that take the Browns here this week. Because you have to take this type of line value. Now, the Browns were terrible in week one. You know, Baker Mayfield, when the protections broke down, he got hit a bunch. When the protections didn't break down, he got happy feet in the pocket, threw the ball away, short hopped some throws. He just didn't look himself. And you wonder how quickly the Browns can fix that with a new head coach in Freddie Kitchens, with new coordinators on both sides of the ball. Defensively, they played okay. They gave up some big plays. Kind of is what it is. But, you know, the Browns, it was such an ugly showing that you sort of wonder, you know, how much can change from 1 week to the next. But then you look at the Jets. 16-0 lead. They scored, 8 points on offense. They had a defensive touchdown and a safety. And now they go from Sam Darnold to Trevor Siemian. And Trevor Siemian does have 24 starts in his NFL career. He's also thrown 24 picks against 30 touchdowns, 59% completion rate. I don't like the Jets skill position guys anyway. Le'Veon Bell goes for that MRI. Now you've got Siemian. So the Jets are not in good shape at all. And if C.J. Mosley doesn't play, and he is questionable here in this one, in the three series without him, the Jets gave up points in all three of them last week. So that would be a big loss for them defensively in a spot where they're probably not going to do much on offense anyway. Now, the Browns, obviously there's some extra incentive coming off of last week's horrific performance, but they're going against Greg Williams. And Freddie Kitchens has to know how to beat this Greg Williams defense. So Browns minus 2.5, it's very hard to pass on this game. You sort of want to keep up with the Joneses. On the other hand, like I said, if the Browns don't win this game, and don't cover the number anyway, there's going to be a lot of people that lose on the Browns. And at 2.5, next to nobody is taking the Jets. So staying off of this game, if the Browns lose, is almost like a win. On the other hand, if you take the Browns off the card and play something else that, you know, you would think, in theory, with the situation for the Browns, they're at a high likelihood to cover, right? Well, let's say that they do win and cover, and you don't play it. Well, you probably have closer to a coin flip proposition that made your card, you know, something like that. So that's the catch-22 here. If you play the Browns and they lose, you lose with everybody. If you don't play the game and the Browns lose, it's like a win. But if you don't play the Browns and they win, you better hope that that game that you replaced it with winds up coming through. So that's really, not in a nutshell, but that's a glaring example here of the decisions that you're forced to make in the Super Contest because of these stale lines. Like I said, I don't think this will be a popular game in the Circa at all now that it's up to 6.5. In the Super Contest, though, 3, 4, 6, some key numbers in there, a lot of people will be on the Browns. So that's the thing. You know, do you risk what looks like a pretty good play in the event that it loses? Or do you stay off of it and just root against the Browns on Monday Night Football? It's a tough decision that some people will have to make, and some people won't think this way in the Super Contest, but it has to be a consideration. You know, just think, if 1,500 people take a loss on this game, and the other game that you threw into your five picks is a winner, that's huge. That's almost a two-point swing there, judging by how much of the field is going to be in play on this game. So there may even be some people that take the Jets plus 2.5, hoping for that two-game swing. I will definitely not be one of them. Some brave souls will do that. There's probably some game theory to it. But that's the big question here about the Browns. So in all likelihood, the Browns will make my card because, you know, again, like I said, if you don't take them, you're replacing them with a game that, you know, has probably a higher degree of variance, probably a less likely percentage to come through. So probably will end up on the Browns to go along with the Bengals, the Steelers, and the Colts here with 4 of my 5 Super Contest picks. And you'll have to check out the article over at bangthebook.com to find out for sure. But that is the big question here is, you know, do you give up the 4 points of line value hoping the Browns lose and maybe you can pick up a 2-game swing? So that's really the question there with the Browns, rotation number 31 in the Super Contest on Monday Night Football. So obviously that's 4, right? Got to have one more here. This is where it gets really tough for me this week. I'm actually adding a 4th lean to discuss here on the segment because, again, I'm not quite sure about the Browns and, you know, still got to decide what I probably want to or what I want to do in that game. The Chargers are a 2.5-point favorite against Detroit, number 5 in the Super Contest rotation order. All of these are listed by rotation number. These are not degree of confidence or anything like that, just going by rotation number here. They're a 2.5-point favorite. And, yeah, road chalk going cross-country this early in the season is a big worry. But I'm not a believer at all whatsoever in Matt Patricia. The Chargers moved the ball very well on the Colts. They did have some pass protection issues for the offensive line. But, you know, those are something that can be fixed a little bit. They ran the ball quite effectively. I would be surprised if the Lions pass rush gets to Phillip Rivers in this game. And I think the Lions are very susceptible in the back 7 if they don't get pressure. They got some pressure against Kyler Murray. Once they stopped pressuring Kyler Murray, they got picked apart in that game. And yeah, Larry Fitzgerald made some plays, but still, they got picked apart by Kyler Murray. What do you think a very experienced, very efficient guy like Phillip Rivers is going to do if that pass rush doesn't get there? So lots of continuity for the Chargers on offense. I do like that. Not many reps for Matt Stafford in the preseason. How does he do going into week 2? The Lions defense got gassed late in that game last week. So if the Chargers play ball control, that could happen again here this week. So on my list of leans here is the Chargers minus 2.5. Next up on the list of leans here, the Dallas Cowboys. They're a 5-point favorite, number 13 in the Super Contest rotation order against the Washington Redskins. Now, the Cowboys played about a perfect game on offense last week. So you would expect some regression, and that is something that I am worried about. But there have been some very good deep dive film studies over at The Athletic and at different places out there on Kellen Moore's offense and what they did. And Dak Prescott just looked so comfortable running that offense, making every correct decision, reading every defender properly. It was fantastic. You know, the RPO game was on point. You know, they did a lot of motion to make the defense tip its hand, showcase where they were going to be. Do the Redskins stay home? Do they play more disciplined now that they've seen what Kellen Moore did? It's a possibility, but also we didn't see very much from Zeke Elliott last week. So maybe the Cowboys do have some more plays in there for the run game here this week with Elliott now going through a full week of practice. I think the Cowboys do have success offensively in this game. Now on the Washington side, Case Keenum, he threw for 380 yards against the Eagles. That was very impressive. He had 117 of those 380 yards on two plays, the missed tackles on the Vernon Davis catch and score, and the deep throw to Terry McLaurin, which was just a very nice play overall. Keenum did overthrow another big play. To me, I don't think the Eagles were ready to go. I think that they overlooked Washington as a 10-point favorite with, you know, Washington's offensive line issues in question. And maybe it took some time for Carson Wentz to get it going too, because he also didn't play in the preseason. I think the Cowboys will be ready to go from the jump here. This offense has new life breathed into it. The defense definitely has some playmakers and some guys that are very solid back there. I know they gave up a lot of yardage to the Giants, but a lot of soft coverage, a lot of protecting a big lead, stuff like that. So maybe there was an overreaction initially to this Cowboys line, but maybe it's justified. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, you know, yeah, it's an overreaction, but what if it's just the truth? What if it's just what we're going to see from the Dallas Cowboys this season? And also, what if Washington just rallied for that one game in the opener, and then now with additional injuries that they have to deal with, what if this week is a tougher spot for them? So Cowboys are on my list of leans. They're 5-point road favorite. Generally don't love laying big road favorite numbers in the NFL, but the Cowboys are on the short list here for this week. Next up on the list, number 22, the Minnesota Vikings, a 3-point underdog on the road against the Green Bay Packers. And yes, I will tell you this right off the top. I do have concerns about Kirk Cousins. You do, I do, we all do. Just is what it is. The Packers, though, a lot of issues with that Matt LaFleur offense in week one. Blown assignments, guys not lining up right, burning timeouts, Rodgers having to call out too many protections. A lot of confusion for the Packers in week one. And what happens when there's confusion? The pass rush can get there. The Vikings may not have the pass rush that the Chicago Bears have, but the Vikings have a very good pass rush and a very good secondary. This is a very, very talented defensive team. Mike Zimmer should be ready here for this one. On most of Green Bay's offense in week one, kind of came off of some Rodgers improv or his ability to throw on the move. A lot of concerns still about that Green Bay offensive line, the injury considerations with guys like, you know, Corey Linsley. You've got Bakhtiari and Bulaga at the tackles. Bakhtiari is already hurt again. Bulaga, a veteran day of rest on Wednesday in practice. I've got a lot of concerns here about the Packers. So Vikings +3 may sneak its way onto the card. Obviously, I'm worried about what happens when Kirk Cousins has to throw the football, because last week he really didn't. 10 pass attempts, lowest in the NFL in, 30 years. So, yeah, I'd be worried a little bit about that. But still, I'm very worried about where Green Bay is right now. Minnesota may be catching them at the right time with that very tough, very physical defense that I think does have the opportunity to get after Aaron Rodgers here. Yeah, Green Bay's got some extra prep time, and they certainly need it with the change of schemes. But I also sort of wonder, from reading some of the notes and some of the recaps and stuff like that, I do wonder if Rodgers and LaFleur see eye to eye here. You know, a lot of late exits from the huddle last week. LaFleur was upset about that. They had to burn some timeouts. And Aaron Rodgers says, well, we got a lot of long play calls. So maybe these two guys are able to smooth things out. Maybe they're able to, you know, have a little bit more continuity this week. But I do think the Vikings are a decent play. I mean, the +3 maybe looks a little bit scary, but I think the Vikings, you know, will get a lot of consideration for me for that fifth and final spot. Finally, number 29, the Philadelphia Eagles here. Road chalk against the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday Night Football. Eagles, a 1.5-point favorite here. Both of these teams dealing with some injury concerns at this point in time. Malik Jackson on IR now for the Eagles. Falcons have some cluster injuries, though, on the offensive line. Lindstrom's out. The backup guard is out, or he's at least banged up. He may still play. Jamon Brown is going to play at right guard. He was scratched last week. Tells you what the offensive line coaches and what Dan Quinn think of him. Matt Ryan and Dirk Cotter just didn't hit it off in week one. And you have to ask, was that the Vikings or was that the Falcons? I'm not exactly sure. But what I do know is that the Eagles offense is going to put, you know, guys like Deion Jones, like Keanu Neal out there in space, make them cover, make them run all over the field here. Will they be up to the task? Because keep in mind, these are two guys that have had some serious injuries here recently. You know, got to get to game conditions themselves. So the Eagles could be a sneaky little play here on Sunday night. Obviously, their defense has to play better than it did against Washington. But I think that could very well be the case because, like I said, I think Philadelphia kind of overlooked Washington a little bit in that week one matchup. So, again, here are the four plays that are very likely to make the card for me. Colts plus +3, Steelers minus -4, Bengals minus -2, Browns minus -2.5. At least for the Super Contest, Bengals are minus -1.5 in the Circa, so they will definitely be on the card there. Eagles are minus -1 in the Circa. Browns minus -6.5 will not make the card. So two from that list of leans likely to make the card here for the Circa Million. And those leans are Chargers minus -2.5, Cowboys minus -5, Vikings plus +3, and Eagles minus -1.5. So there are my thoughts for week two of the Super Contest. Once again, over at bangthebook.com, you can find that Super Contest preview article. And then next Tuesday, we'll have our recap article as well.